The LinkedIn Podcast Network is sponsored by TIAA. TIAA makes you a retirement promise, a promise of a guaranteed retirement paycheck for life. Learn more at TIAA.org/promisespayoff.
Hello, my friend, and welcome to another exciting episode of Negotiate Anything. Thanks for joining us today. With over 10 million downloads and listeners from more than 180 different countries, it's dedicated listeners just like you who have made Negotiate Anything the number one negotiation podcast in the world. I'm your host, Kwame Christian. I'm a business lawyer, mediator, author, and the proud CEO of the American Negotiation Institute. Now, before we get into today's insightful conversation, I have a golden opportunity for those of you who recognize the power of negotiation in your professional lives. Have you ever found yourself wishing that you could navigate those high-stakes conversations with more confidence? Or perhaps you're looking to empower your team with the art of persuasion and conflict resolution? At the American Negotiation Institute, we've crafted specialized keynotes and workshops tailored for those very needs. We've transformed the negotiation skills of professionals worldwide, and we're eager to do the same for you. We believe the best things in life are on the other side of difficult conversations, and our goal is to help you improve your lives and the lives of those around you, one difficult conversation at a time. Don't let another challenging conversation leave you second-guessing. Click the link in the description to discover how we can help you find confidence in conflict, negotiate better deals, and have stronger relationships. Because in the world of business, every conversation counts. And now, without further ado, let's jump into the interview. Greg, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Kwame. I'm excited to be here.
Yes, we are excited to have you, my friend. So how about you get us started by telling us a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Perfect. So my name is Greg Scott. I'm the co-director of the Ralph and Lucy Shea Sales Center here at Ohio University. We're an undergraduate sales program, the largest in the country in terms of selective sales programs, with about 600 undergraduate students all learning skills in sales. Our goal and mission really is to help undergraduates at Ohio University gain a skill set that is very, very marketable and ultimately find jobs. We have 100% job placement of our senior class by the time of graduation.
Wow. Okay. So, Greg, how do you get better if you're at 100%? That's incredible.
You know, there's always people that need it. You know, at the end of the day, the beautiful thing about a university is every 4 or so years, if you do your job right 4 years, you've got a whole nother group of people coming into the university. So we've been around since 1997. We were one of the really first three university sales programs in the country. And so what we've really figured out over our basically 25 years of history is how do you scale sales education? And also, honestly, how do you make sales and really an interesting opportunity for an 18, 19, 20, 21 year old and get them interested to actually learn the skill set and the tools to ultimately hopefully better themselves and the world around them.
This is great. And now I want to give you an opportunity to sell us all on sales. Okay. And so when you think about sales as a skill, not just for people who want to actually go into sales and they see themselves having a career in sales going down the road, but people who their job title might not include sales, but they have to sell every day. So sell us on the importance of sales skills.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and it's something that it's no secret. I start really every semester, especially with newer students, that you're not going to offend me. In fact, I'd rather we get all the stereotypes of sales out of the way. So, you know, we typically start with, you know, when you hear the word sales, what do you think of? Right. And inevitably you hear things like, you know, sleazy, pushy, unethical, you're going to hear basically the worst version of, you know, the case, if you will. And then we usually ask the question that, okay, when you think of the word service, what do you think about? And you think about helpful. You think about somebody who's, you know, trying to help a customer, help a client, help people. You think about, you know, somebody who's asking questions, who's being empathetic, right? And that's really where, for us as a program, what we think about is servant selling, right? In the idea that, yeah, can you have a very successful career and make, you know, a really healthy living selling? Absolutely you can. But if you start with that idea of I'm just here to make money, then yeah, you're probably going to do some pretty unethical, some pretty bad things. Rather, if you start with the idea that, hey, I'm here to help people, that's what I want to do. That's really why I'm here. That's what a salesperson inherently should be doing, is helping them, helping a customer, helping somebody discover problems. find a solution and ultimately push forward. That's really where I think that we start seeing the light bulbs kind of click on. You know, to your point, we're always selling, you know, whether you want to be a salesperson or not. You know, if you go through a job interview process and there's interviews, it's a sales call. You know, realistically, it's a sales call for yourself, but you're still having that conversation and you're still following the process. It's interesting. You know, one of the things that recently we took over in the sales program was enrollment, basically recruiting for undergraduate admissions here within the College of Business. And, you know, we started really with the mindset of, hey, it's a sales call. You know, when you're sitting down and meeting with a 17-year-old high school student, their family, their friends, you know, maybe aunt, uncle, you know, guardian, grandparent, whoever it may be, ultimately you're having a sales conversation. You're trying to assess, hey, what are you looking for in a university? What are you looking for in a business school education? What are you looking for in those pieces? And then ultimately, by asking those questions, you can identify what are the value propositions, what are the areas that you can actually deliver for you know the student or their decision-making unit. And so that's really where for us, we think about, hey, how can you really apply the sales process? Whether your title has sales in it or not, you know, whether you consider yourself a salesperson or not, we really feel like the skills of being able to ask really good questions to identify what's most important, that skill is not going away. If anything, it's become more and more prevalent and important because it's one of the areas that realistically, you know, AI and other technologies can't really automate away very well. You know, it's that human connection. It's the emotional connection. It's being able to have those conversations that we really feel like is fairly future-proofed.
Yeah, you're spot on. And that's one of the things when you think about the Turing test in artificial intelligence. Yeah. Can the computer be smart enough to trick a human that it is not a computer, right? Still haven't figured that one out, which is great because you're right. Ultimately, it's job security. Your humanity and putting skills behind your humanity is the thing that ensures your viability in the professional world. So very well said and critical. And the reality is, too, because we're all selling in different ways. And I think if you bring that healthy mentality around selling and then empower people to realize that selling is not a bad word and they are selling any every day, so you might as well learn how to do it well. I think that's really powerful and you're putting the students in a good place to succeed in the long term.
Yeah, absolutely. It really is critical. And, you know, the proof's in the pudding. You know, most of our we really operate the program on a corporate partnership model. So we self-fund via basically organizations that see the value in recruiting from a talent pool of really high caliber students and students that really have a desire to go into sales. We fund the model that way. But realistically, most of our partnerships, they're long-term partnerships, right? These are companies that have worked with us for 10 plus years because they say, hey, look, your students outperform. You know, they really are the ones that they're coming into these positions and they're doing incredibly well. And then they're progressing up and, you know, they're becoming now future leaders of the organization. So it's a really nice model for everyone. It means it helps the students of a high university obviously get great jobs. And it helps the employers of Ohio and all over realistically have a really strong talent pool year over year.
This is great. And, you know, it's funny because for me as the CEO here, recognizing that we're growing our sales team and recognizing how difficult it is to grow the sales team, it's challenging. So I'm seeing the purpose behind Shane making sure that you got on the show and talked to me. this is really great. And I hope this helps other people too recognize, yeah. Oh, there is a pipeline that we can tap into for really ethical, but also ethical and effective salespeople. It's a great partnership. And I think the thing that's just fascinating to me just on the side is just that it's not that prevalent in the industry. Like, why is this not more prevalent? It makes so much sense because you've been leading and you've been leading for a long time, but people haven't been trying to replicate that. What do you think is the disconnect between traditional education and the reality that practical sales skills are important?
Hello, my friends. Before we get back to today's episode, I want to ask you a question. Have you ever wondered how to elevate your team's negotiation game and how you can help the folks on your team have better, difficult conversations? At the American Negotiation Institute, we offer transformative keynotes and workshops tailored to empower professionals with top-tier negotiation and conflict resolution skills. Whether it's a keynote for your next event or hands-on training for your team, we've got you covered. Don't just negotiate. master the art with the American Negotiation Institute. Click the link in the description to find out more. Elevate, negotiate, and succeed.
The LinkedIn Podcast Network is sponsored by TIAA. In the last 100 years, we've seen financial markets swing, new currencies come and go, decades of savings lost in days, all showing that a retirement plan without a guarantee, quite simply, isn't enough. So more than a retirement plan, TIAA makes you a retirement promise, a promise of a guaranteed retirement paycheck for life, a promise that pays off. Learn more at TIAA.org/promisespayoff.
From the minds of visionaries to the desks of disruptors, I'm Laura Schmidt, host of the Redefining Work podcast. Join me each week as we explore the new world of work through the lens of those shaping it. CEOs, HR leaders, investors, and more. Be a part of the conversation that changes everything. Subscribe to Redefining Work today.
Yeah, you know, you're spot on, Kwame, in the sense that I think the higher education industry as a whole really, it's been behind, especially within the sales space. You know, if you look at the broader landscape, depending on how you measure it, there's about 4,000 institutions of higher education in the U.S. Those are, you know, groups that basically degree grant. Of those, there's only 200-250 that really have any degree of sales curriculum. You know, I'm talking even just a class or two classes, let alone, you know, a full on program. You know, the numbers of even the 200 or so, if you look at kind of a multi-class program where it's a certificate model or a minor or a major, you know, all of those programs, it's fewer than 100, you know, realistically. And so from that standpoint, you know, there's definitely a major mismatch in terms of the marketplace when you consider about 50% of all college grads will start in sales or a selling related career. And so, you know, there's a lot of institutions that, you know, candidly, they are behind in that sense. We're seeing more shifts happen, and I think that's healthy and good. You know, I think honestly what's happening is the consumer of higher education, right? So your traditional higher ed, you know, customer is a 17, 18 year old, give or take. They're becoming more educated, I think, in the sense that they're becoming a more educated consumer of the service itself. You know, it used to be where, you know, how did you actually, you know, quote unquote, buy higher education? You looked at a booklet, maybe you talked to a guidance counselor, and, you know, maybe you toured the campus and that's about it. You know, now, you know, you can actually really connect on a much deeper level. You know, you can reach out to people on social media and see, you know, see the campus, get their opinions of it. You can get a much deeper view. And I think, you know, programs like ours that really provide a jumping off point for a career that is a high earning career, it definitely is attractive. Now, you know, one of the reasons why we're seeing the challenges, honestly, in the marketplace is, you know, it's hard to find people that want to teach sales. In all honesty, there's really a mismatch in terms of, you know, your two sources of talent. You know, if you're a really good salesperson, chances are you're making a pretty good living. And while higher education, I love it, is great, you sometimes aren't necessarily making the same degree of earning that you could make out there selling. So, you know, you're more practitioner professor. Is harder to find. Now, on the flip side, you have what are called tenure track professors. So typically that's kind of like a PhD or somebody with a terminal degree. You know, those folks, there are certainly PhDs in typically marketing strategy that have sales focused. There just aren't that many of them. And honestly, there's only a few campuses in the country that you could actually get a PhD with a sales marketing focus that is that attractive. And so, you know, you have kind of this issue of, even if a university is forward thinking and wants to, you know, I would say shift away from maybe the more pure liberal arts focus towards a more practical skill set focus, or at least add that on, it's hard to find people to actually teach that in a way that is effective and honestly in a way that connects and attracts students to the program.
That makes a lot of sense. And I can see the challenges, but also I can see the opportunities for the people who can manage to do it well. Like you and your program, you've managed to do it well and you've taken advantage of that. So it's really impressive. And one of the things that we talked about in our little pre-interview chat too, is the fact that the dynamics of sales are changing. And so what may have worked 5-10 years ago, it's not working the same way now. So can you tell us a bit more about those changes?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think when you really look at the broader sales landscape, you're seeing consultative sales approaches, relationship-based sales approaches, really, you know, becoming the go-to or the king. You know, ultimately, what we're really seeing is if it was able to be automated, it probably was automated the way, you know, and that's really where you started seeing, you know, your more transactional sales, you know, approaches or industries. Realistically, don't have nearly the same degree of demand of salespeople they would traditionally have, right? You know, realistically, kind of the order taker, if you will, is going away because it's just inefficient. You know, paying somebody to sit, you know, and wait for a phone call to place an order is, you know, not necessarily that efficient when you can, you know, set up a Shopify for what, $100 a month, and you have a really nice website, and you know, you're good. You know, what isn't going away, and really, if anything, is becoming even more prevalent, is a consultative seller. You know, somebody who's leading with insight, somebody who, you know, sees the overall marketplace, really becomes an expert in their sector, in their industry, and is able to provide value to their customers and clients. In ways that aren't just what the product itself is even focused in on, but in ways that, you know, are truly kind of a business advisor or a trusted advisor. You know, what we've really seen, and I think that's really the culmination of why, for some of the audience that knows the Challenger sale, you know, that book came out in, but now it's close to 10 years old. And I think the area that we've seen really take off within that, in that book, is the idea of insight selling. So the idea of, you know, you don't just go to your customer client with this idea of, you know, hey, here's what I have, what do you want to buy, right? You really go with the idea of, we're going to do market research, we're going to look for ways that we can provide value to you, maybe not even just with the product or service, but tangential to it, right? You know, I think that you're starting to see even industries that have traditionally been commodity-based industries shifting much more towards, are there additional services that we could offer, right? There's this concept of servitization within marketing. So the idea of, and you're seeing it in a bunch of the more even traditional manufacturing industries, you know, selling basically add-on services, added-on data services into their actual core product. You know, I think about, you know, like a Rolls-Royce engine for planes. You know, they're now selling major data packages along with the engines themselves. And that really comes out of the fact of, hey, you know, we want to protect protect our lead, but it's not just on the product side. It's on, hey, what else can we actually help provide our customers with? So, that's really one area where I think, we're seeing more and more of that demand, of really organizations that hire salespeople that can ask great questions and can actually listen to the answers to those great questions and use those answers to help ultimately everyone involved in the sales process.
Yeah, that's incredible. And it really helps to identify why it's so important to stay up on your training, whether it's sales or negotiations, because things change. Yeah. We're living in a dynamic world, but a lot of our education is static. So most people are either undereducated or completely uneducated when it comes to their specific field. So we just happen upon a career in sales or happen upon a career in procurement, you know, and then now it's like, oh, I'm negotiating or selling for a living. Never got training, but I'll learn on the fly. That's good enough, right? You know, that's what you want the pilot to say too. It's like, so it makes sense. We have to constantly update these skills. And so when you think about the people who are out there, I say, listen, thanks, Greg. This is cute and everything. This newfangled, new school approach to selling. I was doing Challenger. I've been making hundreds of thousands of dollars. Why do I need to change? What is the risk? So what would you say to that person who's kind of stuck in their ways of doing selling the old way?
Yeah, you know, I think there's really that idea of, you know, we have choices, right? Really, at any given time, you have an inflection point. You know, you have the opportunity to say, hey, you know, do you want to stay the status quo or do you want to make a change? And if you stay the status quo, ultimately what we know is you're not really staying the status quo. You're actually declining relative to the people who say take an alternative path. And so realistically, you know, I hear this sometimes from typically more older school sellers, if you will, you know, folks that say, hey, I've been doing this for 20 years, 30 years. You know, I don't need to change. Somebody else needs to change, right? I hear that a lot from especially managers, leaders, as they were recruiting, especially millennials. I'm a millennial myself, but, you know, I would hear a lot of, you know, these millennials need to understand, you know, that the world isn't like how they think it is, and they need to adapt to us and make those changes. And, you know, certainly there's a kernel of truth there as well. I'm not going to completely discount the critique, but I also really have heard a lot around, you know, look, the younger workforces, they want different things, you know, and in some cases, in all honesty, it's to the company's benefit of what they want. You know, but it does require the idea of you will have to make some changes. You know, I really think about it as if you want to take the status quo approach, then you're declining because someone else is out there and they are making changes. You know, it's the same idea of when you think about kind of the postmortems of these giant corporations, these S&P 500 companies that ultimately they wake up one day and it's like the startup has eaten their lunch. And they're like, oh, woe is me. How could this possibly happen? It's like, well, it didn't happen overnight, honestly. It happened off of a bunch of small decisions, a bunch of small choices around, you know, we don't want to adapt. We don't want to change. We don't want to continuously improve. And that's really where I think that, you know, honestly, to some extent, a lot of, you know, to our earlier point, a lot of the institutions of higher education have taken more of the status quo approach. I think the organizations that have not, you know, the colleges and universities that haven't, you know, honestly, the proof's in the pudding. You can take a look at the enrollment levels, and you can see that, you know, a lot of the universities that have made adaptations and changed the way they have taught what they're teaching are more successful because, you know, your customers and clients aren't dumb, you know, and you know, you're really not going to get away with, you know, just say, hey, you know, this is how it always is, so just trust me. You know, I think that that's a big area where, you know, for us, we're seeing more and more of that idea of, you know, dividends because we made changes and made choices a few years ago. And the program just continues to grow because of those choices.
Yeah, that's great. I think that's a fantastic answer because you're right. Everything changes. And if you're just staying stagnant, you are slipping behind. When you think about the, like, who was on the Fortune 500 list 20 years ago, it looks very different from what it looks like now. And those people thought they were rock solid, and now they're slipping behind if they still exist, you know?
Yeah.
So that's legit. And one of the things that you mentioned earlier was in our pre-interview was talking about the value of diversity in sales. And I thought that was really interesting because when you think about it in the business world, especially in sales, we're just focused on the numbers. It's, hey, listen, if it makes dollars, it makes sense, right? And so the question is, does diversity make sense in the sales space?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's a big passion, honestly, for our program. We were really, I would say at the forefront within the sales program space of actually having, we have both a student director. So we have 28 different student leaders within the program. So again, we're all about development, continuous improvement. So every single year we have new students come in and help us lead the program. But we also have a faculty director of diversity, equity, inclusion as well. All really focused in on, number one, how do we attract the most diverse set of students, in really every respect as a program? You know, we are, really trying to be the biggest tent possible because we really believe that, the skills of sales are beneficial no matter what you want to do, and where you come from. But moreover, you know, to your point, absolutely the dollars and cents matter. And, you know, I think that's something where for a lot of organizations, you know, the reason to do diversity, equity, inclusion, sure, it's absolutely the right thing to do. Don't get me wrong. But also it's the right thing to do from the bottom line. You know, I think that that's an area that to some extent, you know, I think that the moral stance, right, trying to take a moral stance around diversity, equity, inclusion, it's a tougher battle. The battle that's more effective to me is take the purely capitalistic stance of, hey, guess what? It leads to better outcomes, right? Everybody wins. You know, you're able to attract people with different viewpoints, different life experiences. You're able to attract people who can connect with a different customer base in a way that maybe someone else can. And that's really an area where for us, our approach is very much on the ground recruiting for our students. You know, we have to recruit every single student that comes to our program. And so, you know, we have basically what we call ambassadors to every different multicultural organization here on our campus. You know, we're connecting with our LGBT center. We're connecting with, you know, all of the other multicultural fraternities that we have, as well as some of the other like student unions. And so really what our approach is to get, you know, in front of people and just share, hey, you know, sales isn't just used cars and insurance and snake oil. There's a heck of a lot more behind it. And that's really what we really try to focus in on.
Yeah, I think that's brilliant. And I agree with your approach of using the capitalistic type of persuasive model. And I know there are going to be some people saying, ugh, that sounds icky. I don't like that. We should just do it because it's the right thing to do. Well, we're not trying to convince you. because you've already been convinced. That's not an issue. But a lot of people, it really just simply comes down to, I'm trying to run a business. I need to meet my numbers. Does this help me meet my numbers? Oh, Greg, it does. Tell me more. Yeah. And now they realize, yes, now I'm an advocate for diversity because it lines my pockets. It might not be like the best, like it might not feel like the best way of persuading. But when I think about it, for me as a lawyer, my clients pay me to get the job done, right? And when you think about when our goal as advocates and allies and everything, we want people to really adopt these methodologies because, yes, it's the right thing to do. But also, we realize there's a path to persuasion that's tied to profit too. And when you look at the research as well, if you do these programs the right way, you are really supercharging the work that you're doing because different people can connect in different ways. The more different viewpoints that we can adopt, the fewer blind spots we have, which will increase our ability to make better deals, make more sales, those type of things. So I really appreciate you sharing that.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. I absolutely couldn't agree more.
Yeah, so this is great. So when you think about the next steps for the program and the fact that you're constantly trying to improve and doing a great job of it, what do you think the next iteration of the program in sales looks like?
Yeah, you know, it's a great question and something that I honestly, it excites me to wake up every day because, I see a lot of opportunity all over. You know, I think honestly, the interesting thing about COVID in particular, it really challenged us to think about, you know, hey, how can we deliver education? Very quickly into our full switch to virtual, that was fall of 2020. We basically completely converted one of our conference rooms into basically a multi-camera studio. And that's how we taught our virtual classes, was with, you know, the kind of nice camera, sound equipment. We had lower thirds. We had graphics all over the screen. We did a lot to really try to challenge, how do you teach even online and virtually? And the interesting thing is now that we're back in person, you know, some of those tools we've actually now brought into the classroom in a way that we never thought we really would have. I think on the other side of that, you know, we're still looking at, you know, hey, we learned this competency of virtual education. We learned the competency of how do you engage students virtually. And so we're actually starting to look at how do you bring some of those pieces back into what was a traditional residential in-person experience here at Ohio University. I think one of the big areas for us is we're continuing to scale. Our College of Business has hit back-to-back years of record enrollment. In part, I think, honestly, because students see the value. I'll take a little bit of credit in the sense that the sales program took over our recruiting process for the last 2 years or so. And so we basically literally put in a sales process for recruitment. But really, moreover, the interesting part about it is that, you know, because we have back-to-back years of record enrollment, we really have an opportunity here to teach more students than ever before. And that's an area that every single, I'd say, day now, we're challenging ourselves as to how do we reach the broadest audience? How do we provide the most value to every single student on our campus?
I love this, Greg. This is fantastic. And so for the listeners who want to connect with you, learn more, maybe join the program, what's the best way for them to make that happen?
Absolutely. So I'm on LinkedIn. It's probably our absolute best way. If you search the Ralph and Lindsay Shea Sales Center or my name, Greg Scott, we are pretty active posters, I would say, in terms of getting content up there. Our other handles are at Shea Sales. So Shea is S-C-H-E-Y and then sales. That's on Instagram, TikTok. You could actually see me doing a series called Resume Rips that I do to try to help our undergrad students perform and get better resumes. That's a fun one for us. And then we are also, obviously, if you search Ohio University Sales Center, we'll come up there as well.
Oh, Greg, I was disappointed. I thought you were going to do some sales-related dancing on TikTok. That's what I was waiting for, man.
Not yet. I'm not there yet, although I think every semester the students want me to. So we're getting closer and closer to it.
That's awesome. That is awesome. Well, listen, Greg, really appreciate it, my friend. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Kwame.
Congratulations, you've just joined an elite club. By listening to a full episode, you're now officially on the Negotiate Anything team. So welcome aboard. What most team members do is they subscribe to the podcast because that allows them to automatically get the latest episodes of the show. The best things in life lie on the other side of difficult conversations. Keep learning, keep practicing, and keep getting better. Your relationships will improve, your career will soar, and you'll have the confidence you need to get the most out of these crucial conversations. Again, thank you for joining the team. We're excited to have you, and I will see you in the next episode. I'll catch you later.